basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and all quiet on the transaction front from the Lakers' standpoint since last pod we recorded. Mark Stein reported last night that there's a bit of a backlog at the league office, and we should be getting some more official deals today, but we will see if the Lakers are in on that, because I do think that they're holding out to maximize the level of flexibility that they have as they pursue the trade market that we got into yesterday. But so today, we're going to talk Summer League. Lakers just finished the California Classic, a torturous 2-1 record. Sure didn't feel that way for at least half of it, D. In what's becoming a time-honored tradition, they got the living crap beat out of them in the first game by the Warriors, down 30-35 for most of that. I didn't know a Summer League game could make me as angry as that made me. Apparently, I had something pent up to get riled up about. But then about halfway through the second game, they started defending a little bit and had a nice comeback, culminating in an Anton Watson putback in double OT, the sudden death rule, super fun there. And then yesterday, another comeback win down from double digits with a lot of the guys sitting and Cameron Carr being one of them in the second half. He played in the first half, apparently had a toenail issue and did not play in the second half, but nothing serious. Adu did not play in that game. Kind of a skeleton crew there, but Lakers get the win. And D, I want to start with Cameron Carr. Those first two games, man, he looked wonderful. That first half that he played, it didn't look great in the last game, but he's a guy I was very excited about adding to the team, and I thought he showed sort of the reasons why. So, D, we always talk about the difference in watching somebody on a day-to-day basis versus their highlights or their scouting report, no matter how hard you try in doing that. What were your first impressions of Cameron Carr?
Yeah, I want to further contextualize this, Pete, is that it is Summer League. It is an environment in which neither teams are really super organized. I thought the Warriors are traditionally one of the more organized teams at whatever sort of stage or group or whatever. It's just like, hey, we do what we do. And I really do feel like they do a good job of teaching what they want. That said, overall, it is sort of like this collection of guys who are all out there to both make an impression on what their skill sets are, do it to the team that they're on, but also to everyone else. The organizing principles are akin to playing pickup basketball with some plays drawn up than it is to actually playing organized team basketball the way that you would in a preseason environment, even where it's backed up by training camps and more practices and an emphasis on what you're going to be doing during the regular season. Contextualizing everything within that, I'm pretty impressed with what Carr has been doing and how he's been playing. And you talked about how the difference between watching highlights and what a player looks like on a play-to-play basis. Many of Carr's production and what he looks like as a player through the 2.5 games that he has played remind me a lot of his highlights. Actually, it's him stepping into threes. It's him shooting with confidence. It's him sort of looking light on his feet and how he's moving around the court. Some of his relocation, he's doing a lot more as an outside shooter than he is attacking the basket. But he's attacked a couple of closeouts and gotten to the rim. He had that nice sort of two-hand dunk finish where he took off from the dotted line area. He had another double clutch layup to start this most previous game, the third game that he didn't finish. And I'm just like, okay, man, coming off wide pin down, curling in to the paint or to the free throw line area and getting off quick pull-up jumpers. Shoots a very soft ball. He can score it, and he looks like a NBA-level shooter and offensive player to start out with.
That was one thing I was curious about. Is he an athlete who can shoot, or is he a shooter who's also an athlete, and he seems to be much more of the latter. The volume he's able to get, a bit more context is, our point guards freaking suck on this team. We got a little bit of decent guard play toward the end of the second half of the last game, but the point guards on this team are rough. We had Ryan Russillo starting at the one in the first game, and just, man, I'm watching all these guys, and Adu actually has had a lot of the on-ball responsibility when he's played, because he's the only guy that can beat anybody off of the dribble. With everything that Carr has done, it's been, like you said, much more jump shot-based, but his footwork and the ability to do stuff off of movement, the ability to hit a three coming off of a screen, or also curl it and then hit the mid-range jumper off of that, the sidesteps and relocations that you talked about, just there's a level of fluidity to him as an athlete that's not just him jumping high, it's just his footwork and all of that. Like, he's a very smooth player.
Totally. The three he hit off of sort of that scissor cut where he's literally just coming right off a screen, catching the ball, one-twoing into a three-pointer, that's a high-level look. I get it. That's not name top defender X chasing him off of a screen, providing back pressure or whatever, but the footwork is the same. The look is the same. The how do I get to this is the same. And for him to be able to hit that shot and then on another possession, like I said, curl and look, I don't want to throw around a bunch of names or whatever. There were shots that Kobe used to hit where the defender is stepping up quickly to him while he comes off of a screen. And rather than pull up and shoot his normal jumper, he's sort of releasing the shot quickly on his way up. And for Kobe, it would come as a push shot a little bit, like, oh, he's shooting like a 16-foot floater. Mm-hmm. And those were some incredibly difficult shots. There's this one highlight that sticks in my mind where he's coming off a play like that. And I want to say it's against Phoenix in that closeout game, with the one where he hit Alvin Gentry on the butt. And he hits this shot coming off like that. And it's like a one-handed push shot from the left elbow area. And Doug Collins is like, are you kidding me? How good is Kobe Bryant? And just one of those, right? Carr, very similarly, came off of a screen, curled to the right elbow. It was more of a form jumper, but he did a very quick release as the contest was coming up on him very quickly. That's a higher level shot than what it looks like just from the, oh, a little come up off of 2 feet midi, the way that he hit it. The quick release, the push shot, the understanding of where the defense is. Okay, this kid can score. And the three-point volume and the ability to get to his shot is impressive to me. The degree that he can do this against the highest level defenses, okay, that remains to be seen in any summer league environment. I have questions about that stuff. But I could see him playing off of Luka Doncic. I can see him playing off of Austin Reeves. I can see him camping weak side, for example, Pete, and just being like, I'm getting spot up jumpers. Sweet. And he can make these shots. And I wasn't sure if the shooting was real. But through a couple of preseason games, I'm just like, okay, bro, you're shooting damn near 50% from three on some good looks, but some contested looks. And he's just making it happen.
Yeah, you can tell this is what he does. I heard a rant from Tim Legler right after the draft where he was talking about, like, what am I missing with this kid? He's got the best shooting mechanics in the draft. And Legler, I think, is eighth all-time in three-point percentage. Not only is he an overall NBA analyst who's very good, he's a subject matter expert on jump shooting, and he was just raving about his mechanics. And you can see it because he is good at getting himself open on the front end. He is going to get jammed up, and they haven't top locked against him a ton. Now, he is a back cutting threat off of those top locks, and when we do have that decent point guard play, that's one of the things I'm excited about, is somebody setting him up and using that. But when they're not top locking him, he's pretty quick for a tall and lanky guy to be able to get separation, and he doesn't need a ton of it because he elevates really well and quickly on his jumper, and he's got that high release point. So some of these contested threes that you're talking about, Deke, he's actually getting his separation at the top end of his shot, right? Where he's getting that elevation and he's releasing it high. And so a hand's there, but it's just the elevator doesn't go up as far as his does. So let's go to break here. Come back. Keep talking about Carr.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Is there a comp to him that you see? I've talked about Trey Murphy in the past. Are there any other names that come to mind for you?
Devin Vassell is another one that's a little more his height, but doesn't quite have the same length. He's somewhere, I think the Murphy comp is very spot on. I saw another one of Terrence Ross, a player who's no longer in the league, but I think that's a good one as well. But yeah, that ability to be a high-level athlete who's a shooter first and foremost, that's something that really stood out. He's also blocked, I think, three jumpers in three games, and we'll get to his defense in a moment because it's been more of a mixed bag, but I've just been super thrilled. So how about you? Do you see any other guys?
No, Murphy's the guy that I think of a lot. I saw someone mention Zach LaVine online the other day, and I thought that was interesting as well, just in terms of a high-level athlete that can shoot jumpers. Mm-hmm. LaVine, I thought, had more guard skills coming out of UCLA and more shot creation ability, and Carr really hasn't shown as much of that. Although I will say, we've been focusing a lot on his finishing and his shot-making ability. He's shown some passing chops and some passing understanding as well, that throwing passes over the top, if he's seeing the high hedge or a guy is stepping up when he's coming off of a screen, he's shown the ability to make the pass to the roller, both as a pocket pass or the over-the-top pass, which are critical reads for any shooter. And those are the reads you want a player of his archetype to have in his bag and to be able to make quickly. And so I've liked the fact that he's made a couple of those passes already. Some of the things that I haven't been as fond about in terms of just offensive stuff is the shot selection. He has gotten a little bit, you know, like, okay, like I'm thirsty for these a little bit. And I get it. It's this environment. But to me, part of the thing that I try to forecast forward with players is, are you finishing at the level that you're finishing because you're in such a good rhythm, because you are the focal point of things, right? Mm-hmm. And will you be able to make all of these shots at the same level if you don't touch the ball for three or four possessions in a row and suddenly you're just getting a shot up? Carr hasn't had those challenges yet, Pete. He's been the focal point of things, and he's been getting the ball a lot. So it's something that I'll keep my eye out for.
My one pushback a little bit to that is that he hasn't done a ton of it off of the dribble. He's coming off of screens, and he'll dribble after that, right? But it's not give him the ball at the top and break guys off of a pick and roll type of thing. That we saw Josh Hart win, I think, a Summer League game MVP off of this. Max Christie a couple of years ago had a lot of on-ball touches that it's like, they're not really going to do that at the NBA level. I've thought what he's doing in terms of the actions that he's scoring off of are fairly close to what he'll be doing with the big club.
Yeah, just at higher volume, right? And so
that's a very fair
point that you're making, that he's not out there getting the ball at half court and screen after screen after screen and doing a lot of off-the-dribble work. Let's pivot to defense, though, Pete. He is a loud defensive player to me, in that the plays that he makes are big plays, high contest and forcing a tough miss or actually blocking jump shots. What else stands out to you about his defense?
So he's got a high center of gravity, and I think that he's a little bit wary of getting beat with quickness. But in that first game against Golden State, you had Will Richard and Yaxel Lendeberg and I think one other guy on their pro club that can shoot and within that system and really know where their looks are. And remember the old Mark Jackson hand down, man down thing? There was a lot of that where that's called your stick hand, right? And if you close out with the high hand like that, if you've got your arm up, you're vulnerable to the drive. And if you've got your arm down, you're vulnerable to the jump shot. And one of the things I kept yelling at my TV was like, use your length, because he had his hand down on a lot of these possessions against Richard, against Lendeberg, where guys just easily got the shot up as a result of that. But he seemed a little skittish to close out all the way. That's one of the things I'm going to keep my eye on, because it makes sense. You know, the shorter you are, the harder it is to contest something up in the air, but also the taller that you are. And he's a very vertical athlete in terms of his length. It's not as much arms out to the side, wingspan type of thing. It's up in the air. And so the taller you are, the more vulnerable you can be on the ground. So I think he was worried about closing out too much and then getting beat off of the dribble, but he was giving up threes as a result of that. He's had a lot more in the way of help defense possessions where he has a tendency to overhelp and get a little too far into the paint. And then it's like, oh crap, I got to close out in that direction. So going to be some film work with him for sure, because that's what's going to get him on the floor with the big club. If he's making these mistakes with them, he's going to get pulled fairly early and we're not going to see sort of the fantastic offense. But it's not anything that I'm worried about necessarily from a like, oh, he can't do this. It's more of a understanding the scheme, understanding how far you need to help, and just using his length. That was something that I think he's done better in the last game and a half or so that he's played, is just get your hand up, because he's got such special talent there that I thought he was a little too worried about getting beaten by quickness.
That's a great contextualization for the point I was going to make about hand placement, analyzing his physical tools to the degree that he can. In that first game, he actually reminded me a lot of how Brandon Ingram defends, which is just like, look, bro, you've got a 7'4 wingspan in terms of Brandon Ingram. Why are your hands by your side, right? You should be using these appendages. Let me be disruptive with this. And I think Carr can still improve in this regard. And the fact that he has blocked several jumpers through three games is a testament to his ability to recover and then challenge and just be a disruptive athlete in that way. I've also liked the way that he's fought initially on screens when he's had to switch and guys have been trying to bury him underneath the basket. Mm-hmm. He's really been trying to get into three-quarter front and use his length. And I think that he's got a good understanding of how to fight for position in those ways. Off of the ball, though, when he's just sort of lurking, I've noticed a little tendency to float, a little tendency to not be in the mix as much. And I've seen him sort of ole a couple times when guys have been driving around the basket, where he could step up and maybe be a weak side shot blocker or try to step up early and take a charge. And he hasn't done much of that, Pete. And so I know that he's saying a lot of the right things defensively, and that's a good start. I think the application of some of the stuff that he's saying is the next step, right? And I want to see more of that as Summer League progresses. And then as we get into the preseason, I think he will have to show rather than just say.
They got to be on his ass about this early. This is something I really want from the coaching staff. If you've heard his interviews, he seems like a great kid. I love his personality and I think he's got a great mentality, but just the reinforcement of habits and, you know, use the tools that you've got and make sure that you're not sort of floating on the weak side, that you've got a job to do at every moment, because every mistake that you make can get compounded, especially at those higher levels. So hopefully they nip that in the bud early, but really, really like him. Dude, let's shift gears to, I think, the second focus of the Summer League. Didn't play in the last game, but Adu Thiro had a rough night against the Warriors. And then did better in that second game. Some wild moments for sure throughout. Has crashed violently to the ground at least three times in these two games that he played. What have you seen from Adu?
He was just wild in that first game. He looked too eager. He looked like he was rushing things. He looked very much like someone who wanted to prove on every single possession that he was ready to be a high-level player. And I thought that was in stark contrast to how Carr had his success in that game, which was a lot of times just letting the game come to him and being someone who was reactive to what the defense was doing rather than always trying to force the issue. Adu is such a good athlete, though, that I do think that his mentality of like, go, 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 is sort of critical to his overall success as a player. You want him to be able to leverage those tools, possession to possession to possession. I just think he needs to find more control. He was redlining pretty much the entire game, and he needs to learn how to shift gears between first, second, and third more often rather than just pedal to the floor the entire game. I thought a lot of that stuff was worlds better in the second game. He still had some out of control moments, but I also thought he was more locked in defensively. He made some more plays defensively. He made a couple of passes. And at the end of the game, where Watson actually missed the shot that would have won it in regulation. The coaches were starting to put the ball in Adu's hands for the last three or four possessions of the game, and they were setting screens with Carr so he could pick and pop, and then using Adu as a driver. And that was a very effective tactic. And Adu got all the way to the basket and set up Watson for a nice layup that would have won the game. And Watson just missed it as Golden challenged his shot right there. But I thought those last six or eight possessions of game two were some of Adu's best basketball. I see what you're going for here. Where are you at with him?
I think he's far away in terms of understanding how to do certain things. His talent is very apparent, and this is not the role that I think he'll play. That's true of a lot of guys in summer league, but I think for him, point to do, it's great experience. I actually think that him understanding how to drive and kick and where your drive and kicks come from, getting just a certain volume of attempts off of that is going to be important, because even if you're a blender type of player, he is going to have to do that a lot. And so I do like the experience that he's getting at that. But even beyond that, there's just a lot of small stuff that leads to him being off balance or little tricks of the trade. For example, Golden, the big man for Miami, swatted the hell out of him on a fast break. Adu got a couple of steals where he just picked the point guard's pocket. And that was one of the most exciting things, is just he's got a level of perimeter defense and pressure at his size that I would love to see the Lakers deploy. But he gets this steal. Golden is kind of a big, plotting is maybe a little severe, but he's a big dude that's not the fastest guy. But he had the angle on him that a more seasoned player is going to cut in front of Golden to sort of ruin his angle and then get themselves an easy layup off of that. Adu's like, you can't jump with me, but he sure could, right? And ends up just blocking the hell out of Adu. That was one of the three times that he violently crashed to the ground. Then Watson, a few plays later, dunked all over Golden. And it was a pretty fun sequence. But that sort of little tricks of the trade and just the consistently being off balance is one of the things that's really going to burn you at the higher levels of basketball. So he just has a lot of film work, and it's like film works and reps that he needs. That it's just a shame that last season was so much of a redshirt year, because this was really, aside from the G League, the longest bit of basketball we've gotten to see from him at the pro level, that you could just see that he's just got a lot to learn. So let's go to break here, come back and keep it going.
Yeah, the other thing that I would say about Adu is that I thought that his defensive intensity in that first game against the Warriors was not where it needed to be. And I think this can happen to second-year players, particularly ones whose best traits are their physical tools, is they can sometimes feel like, oh, well, I've done this. Adu got some playoff minutes this past offseason and acquitted himself fine in those reps. And it felt like to me, he was just like, oh, well, I'm just going to go out here and just out physical guys and just be bigger, stronger, faster. And he got matched up with Yaxel, and Yaxel just big boyed him a couple of different times. And that was impressive from Yaxel, first of all. Dude's freaking big and strong. I can see it with him. And we saw it with him in, at least for me, the few college basketball games that I watched, particularly the national championship game and the semifinals. Him and Morris Johnson, these are big boys right here. You could tell that they're going to be pros. But I thought Adu never really caught up to what Yaxel was doing to him. And I thought Adu was much better at that in the second game. But to me, Pete, with players like Adu, Alex Caruso's old quotes about you need to know what job you're applying for, and your idea about reps and how on-ball stuff can be useful and good for Adu in this environment. I also think, though, that that still needs to come secondary for him, cutting hard, setting good screens, all defense of the role-player stuff, and defense, of course, but all of the role-player stuff that he's going to be asked to do at the real NBA level, those things need to become staples of his game regardless of the environment. And so if there was like any sort of disappointment that I had, it wasn't just the stuff that you mentioned about being off balance and everything else. Know what your role is going to be in the future and build out off of that and show a mastery of those things first. Because even if you become a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George or even a Kawhi Leonard, who all became these on-ball demons, they came into the league with an understanding of where I'm going to make my bones is on defense and by rebounding and by doing the little things. And then I'm going to branch out off of that. And I feel like the players who never show that understanding and then a mastery of those little things, they never get the chance to be the more dynamic player that they maybe have in their mind's eye. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And one of the players that I think fits this description, a little bit older than Adu, but Chris Mannion, I think, played pretty well over the course of this California Classic. And he comes into the game knowing exactly what his role is and exactly what the job that he's applying for, while also flashing, I think, a little bit more of finishing, and had a really nice step back three that raised an eyebrow there. I've got some questions about him, but he sure can guard the ball, man. And I thought that he did that very well. What do you think about Mannion?
I love his competitiveness, honestly. That first game against the Warriors and even the second game, I was just like, did this guy watch a bunch of playoff tape and be like, if this is how they're going to let people defend, I'm just going to defend like this. Mannion had, I think, 6 or 7 fouls in that first game because he was just heating up the ball every single chance that he got. I love his defensive instincts. There are all these little things he does on defensive possessions, Pete, that stand out to me. He's always talking. He's pointing to guys and saying, I got yours, you go get mine, in terms of Xing out and all of the NBA level, these are important ideas that you're going to need to execute and they need to come naturally to you. He does a lot of that stuff already, to me at least, at a level that is good enough to play. His offensive utility is not there yet, though. He's not yet a spot-up shooter, in my opinion. And his on-ball stuff is not there really either, right? And because he's not a shooter, he's not really getting closed out on, so he's not able to rack closeouts. And he's not a great enough athlete to the point where if he does rack a closeout that he can get to the rim and finish oversize and have it be no issue at all. But I love his tenacity, I love his competitiveness, and I love his defense first focus. And I think that if he continues to round out his offensive game, his defensive floor should allow him to make the league and be a guy that can play for a long time.
Yeah, he's one of those players that if he can get a consistent catch and shoot jump shot, but we've seen a lot of careers laid to waste under that description, D, that he's also a little bit smaller, that I don't think this shows as much in the summer league. But that was one thing that I noticed. I saw him at one G League game in person last year. And then just in general, watching him on TV, like his frame, he's just not that big for that type of player. So I do think that just he's going to have something in the shoot, pass, dribble matrix. And really shoot is the thing that he's going to need to have there that we will see. But definitely somebody that, you know, on a two-way deal and should be around over the course of this year.
What have you thought about the other two-way guys, Pete, Okereke and Suter?
So you do this thing every couple of years. We know where good this is. You do this thing where every couple of years, a new Darius will join the league. And you're always like, I'm not calling him that until he shows that he's good. The first Peter in Lakers history, and he stinks. Sorry. It looked like the game was just way too fast for him. But I've been waiting for a guy named Peter to play for the Lakers my whole damn life. Very excited about this dude. And then he's like our fifth or sixth best guard. He's the one guy where I don't think he should have a two-way. And that happens a lot of times after summer league. You sort of see what you got and then you move on to the next guy. But he is he's Suter to me until further notice.
I was going to say, he's definitely a last name guy. Because you had brought this up to me the other day about Darius Acuff, and I was just like, he better be good or he just gonna be Acuff. It's interesting, the sort of blink idea that you get when you watch a highlight versus what it looks like when you watch a guy play a full game. In the first game, I thought, where's the kid from the highlights with all the moxie and the shit-talking bravado and the sort of, I'm just gonna take all of these shots, it doesn't matter if it's contested or whatever. The, I'm the number one guy on my team idea. Where's that dude? Because every single time I saw him drive or put the ball on the floor, it was just to like, okay, one pass away, I'm just making this read, I'm cutting through, and then that was that. And I thought he was just too passive, just overall. And then when he did take a shot, he missed, where's his flow and his rhythm at? He just looks like he's not playing his game. In the second game, he was still doing some of that, but he got a little bit more aggressive, but the shots weren't going in at all. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh man, does he not have the athleticism or the juice for this level? And maybe the game one started to be recontextualized to me as well. I'm not beating anyone, or I'm not creating any separation, and I'm not able to play my game at this level. I don't think he played in the third game. I'll be interested to see what it looks like during the rest of Summer League in Vegas and whether or not he can find his footing. What's clear to me, though, is he's not a shot creator for others because he's not creating advantage. And if he's just going to be a shooting guard or whatever, it's just, you're going to be stuck behind Carr and even Adu and some of these other guys who were just more dynamic, even if they're not shot creators. So I was disappointed by him. On the flip side, I kind of like Okereke.
Yeah, he's me too. Defensive, like, forward, good size. Yeah.
Yep. He's not the quickest dude or not the highest leaper, but he plays basketball like a dude who I would expect went to college at Cornell, if that makes sense.
And like, yeah.
You're a fundamental dude who sort of understands how to play, where to get to. I know what my strengths are, and I'm going to do this stuff in a very repeatable way over and over and over again. I like his effort, and I just think that he sort of understands his own game and how to be effective within that, right? And so I've liked what I've seen from him overall, even if it hasn't popped. Every play, he's just sort of doing what he's supposed to be doing, and sometimes that leads to something, and other times you don't notice him, but that's good in some ways because he's not standing out for negative reasons either.
Yeah, very solid defensive forward, good size. Really like Arthur Kaluma, played with our South Bay team last year as well. The Lakers started to make those comebacks really behind defense. And in the third game, there were a few guys that played that hadn't played much before. I thought of the Peter Suter ilk. Luke Goody was way better than him, and he looked good out there. Really liked Chase Ross in the few minutes that he got. Had a pick six and breakaway lefty dunk, and, you know, really high-end athlete there. Watson's been okay. He played with our South Bay last year as well, so I thought that they found some guys. William Kyle, for example, in that third game, he didn't do much in the first game, but was really wreaking havoc defensively and getting extra possessions. One of those few guys that'll get you a steal and 2.5 blocks type of thing, D. So those are some of the guys I liked there. So nice little prelude to Vegas. I've really enjoyed the California Classic the last couple of years. We'll be back tomorrow if no Lakers news drops. I'd love to take a trip around the league with you, D. We haven't gotten to talk about several of the transactions that have happened, and so we'll take more of a general NBA type of approach tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.